Hello everybody, this is Loki, Way of Loki, and welcome to No Hit Podcast. Here, it's my job to interview ex-running gamers in the realms of challenge running. Whether that be no hit runs, completing games in entirety without taking a hit or single point of damage, speed runs, completing games that would normally take hours in mere minutes, and other such adventures. Today's guest is Katoon24, that's K-A-T-U-N-24 on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Katoon has done some extraordinary feats in completing games blindfolded, having completed Super Mario Odyssey, Celeste, and Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, to name just a few, all blindfolded, with the Ocarina of Time being done in just under 17 hours without taking a break, blindfolded the entire time. Katoon has also moved on to Mario Kaizo, Mario Kaizo being extremely difficult Mario ROM hack levels, requiring difficult movement techniques and precision. In this conversation, we go through Katoon's appeal of blindfolded running, how he approaches routes and the techniques involved in a blindfolded run, the difficulties of blindfolded running that might not be immediately apparent, as well as Katoon's opinion on what makes a good Kaizo level and the appeal of streaming for him. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Katoon24. Right, Katoon, welcome to the podcast. Thanks very much for taking some time out for this. How's it going, man?
Hello, how's it going?
I'm doing very well. So I had always started this out by saying congratulations, as you've recently been partnered on Twitch, I believe.
Yeah, just a couple days ago. Thank you.
No worries at all. So I wanted to start with speedrunning, your first introduction to speedrunning. Not necessarily blindfolded, if it wasn't blindfolded, but first introduction to speedrunning as a challenge.
So what my first introduction to speedrunning was? Well, actually, that was after blindfolded, after the idea of doing something blindfolded. The thing is, my blindfolded runs have pretty much since the start been about just the challenge of beating a game at all, blindfolded, that is, not so much doing them as fast as possible. And that was back in 2016 when, the thing is, I got introduced to Twitch pretty much early, let's say February 2016, started streaming like some casual stuff, just retro focus, basically. And then a couple weeks only after that, I met Ponk, who a German blindfolded runner who also visual speedrunner of Super Metroid. He was doing that at the time, and yeah, he was challenged by another speedrunner of the game to I don't know what the context was exactly, but to beat Super Metroid blindfolded any percent. And he just got really intrigued by the idea. And he started routing and stratting everything, and he did that run in, I believe, September 2016. And yeah, so as he was talking about it, I'm like, okay, let's just steal this idea and let's try to see how far I can get in one of my favorite games, and that was Donkey Kong Country 2. So one of my that was the first blindfolded run I did, pretty much all throughout 2016, and that's kind of how it went, not through speedrunning myself, but through meeting somebody else who was doing a blindfolded project.
Okay, so blindfolded came first. I just because the terminology on the as labeled as blindfolded speedruns, I just thought that speedrun would come first, but that's interesting.
The thing is, blindfolded runs, you know, not all games are possible to do blindfolded, and for a lot of people, the thrill of just doing a game blindfolded at all, or the excitement of it, it might not be possible, you know. You can only know after practicing and after actually doing a full run, then you can know, okay, this has been confirmed to be possible blindfolded. But a lot of games are absolutely not going to happen because of RNG or extreme precision or, well, a lot of different factors that you can think of. And that was definitely the excitement for me as well, just to try to see if Donkey Kong Country 2 was possible blindfolded. So I started pretty much after the first couple stages. I started with what I thought was going to be the hardest stage, Screech's Sprint, the second half. Not sure if you know the game, but it's basically you're flying with a parrot through a bramble maze. So there's no safe spots, no walls, no floor. I think we're going to talk in length about strats. Maybe that's really interesting to talk about, like how exactly that came to be possible. But that took me about 10 hours to do a very first attempt, like successful attempt of that section of the stage, the second half of that stage. And then I got really motivated to do all the rest. I thought, if this is possible, then the whole game must be probably viable to do blindfolds. And that's kind of how it came to be. Like also Punk, we really didn't think about speedrunning the category at the time, not before 2017, I would say. We did both optimize our runs quite a bit. So yeah, in 2017, that's kind of how it came to be, I would say. just like treating it in the first place as a challenge run. And to be frank, like that's kind of what I've been doing all the time. Well, to route a game, to make it as easy as possible to remember, first of all, and then kind of optimizing it only after that, not going right away for the fastest, most optimal strats. And that's just like currently there's definitely a good number of blindfolded runners who would just do that different, who would go right away for speedy strats, except especially Bubs. Yeah, I would say I've seen him do that at least recently.
Yeah, I spoke to a runner recently called Mitch Riz, who did Sekiro Shadows Die Twice blindfolded, and it's interesting having like doing the completion first. And then he's kept focused on it to then reduce it by several hours at this point, like from 4 hours to now close to two, which is impressive to then have the focus after completing to then try and get it down as well.
Yeah, it's just a completely different approach, I would say, and a completely different idea and a completely different strats. For the most part, you try to go for, or at least that's what I went for the couple games that I actually optimized for speedruns after a first run. You try to really go for optimizing for safety first and then optimizing for speed gradually after that, I would say.
What was it about blindfolded runs that appealed to you to then carry on post the Donkey Kong game?
I would say that the game that I did right after Donkey Kong Country 2 is Donkey Kong Country 1, so that's like very similar in strats, and it fell very much in my comfort zone, and it went way quicker the stratting than 2, and I did 3 later, and then after that was Super Mario World's 11 Exit, I believe, was the third one. So that's still a 2D platformer from the SNES era, similar controls. So I kind of just wanted to expand my horizon a little bit gradually like that by playing a similar game and then a different game of the same genre, and then a 3D game after that, and then an FPS game after that, basically, with Portal. Yeah, what was it that motivated me to do different games? Just basically realizing that the fun I had with Legacy 2, with the Blindfolded Project, was not because I loved the game so much. I do, but like, I never was a visual speedrunner of Legacy 2 at the time. I did some runs only after the Blindfolded run, officially. But just liking the game casually, and the same goes for other games. Most of my Blindfolded runs have been games that I really enjoy casually. And then there's been some games that I played once, not as a kid, not like out of nostalgia, but just once, and then started routing them for a Blindfolded run. And immediately realized that I just didn't have a lot of knowledge about the game yet. Like, it's, of course, speed strats can be very useful, but just knowing a lot about the basic mechanics of a game, that's probably the most important thing to route a blindfolded run. So yeah, I kind of went by that. Just what games do I really know the inner mechanics of quite well? And then trying to think in my head which ones could be viable, which ones might not be viable. That's kind of how it went, so.
And just give a few more examples of runs that Catoon has done, including Super Mario 64, Mario Odyssey, Ocarina of Time, Mega Man, and of course the ones you mentioned, the multiple Donkey Kong countries and Portal.
Yeah, so definitely a lot of 2D platformers, I would say, and also a couple of 3D games from the N64 era. And then Portal is kind of an outlier in that sense. And a couple of indie games, Celeste and Hollow Knight. Shovel Knight, not Hollow Knights. They're also 2D platformers, so it's kind of that's just kind of my genre. And if you ask other runners, they're gonna maybe start with an FPS and then move on to another FPS and kind of expand their the range of types of games they want to do, blindfolded kind of like that.
What was the first 3D game that you went into from platformers?
I believe it was SM64, Mario 64, or was it Portal? So it's been about 3 years. I kind of did them all in the same year back then, the 3D games. But I have to say I had in mind pretty soon after I did Donkey Kong Country 2 and 1 that I wanted to try a bunch of different 3D games, and Super Mario 64. Also, I tried Banjo-Kazooie. That's a whole other story. I never actually finished a run of that. And Ocarina of Time. Those are some of my childhood favorites, I would say. So I had those in mind. I wrote them down on a list of games to check one day. So I think SM64 was the first one to do. And I started routing it actually in 2017, like just a couple of stars, and played the game casually after many, many years again, Mario 64. And then realized that the camera is really uncooperative in that game. And then I met Bubsia, I think that was late 2017, or it might have been 18 already. And he was routing 16-star Mario 64, and kind of by watching him, after a while, I got motivated to try to do the same thing, and then 70-star as well. And I ended up doing 70 star only, but still. Yeah, I was hesitant. I was hesitating to do that game blindfolded at first, mainly because of the camera, I would say. But then realized that that's actually a very cool aspect of routing a 3D game blindfolded, is dealing with the camera and puzzling your way out, solving issues that you can have with the camera, getting stuck somewhere or not knowing in what angle the camera is going to move or is going to be positioned, and then finding out how you can get it to move in a predictable way, basically, to get it behind you, just generally speaking. And Mario 64 is pretty complex in that sense. Portal obviously is more complex, but yeah. So that's kind of, I would not have been able to do Portal as the first 3D game, for example. That would have been too intimidating. But Mario 64 was that step up, I would say, that I needed. And with that game also having a good number of easy sections, like easy stars to do, like the Toad stars, or well, I can't really name any solid examples, because Bubsy, I would say, oh, but that one and that one is way easier. Like rolling rocks in Hazy Maze Cape is a really easy one. Yeah, and then it kind of just went on, like, doing from the easiest ones going to harder and harder stars gradually, like that. You can really build it up. You don't really have to start the game with the first stage, for example, routing it blindfolded, and the first stage being much more difficult than some other stages, which could be the case in linear platformers, for example. You can really choose your stars. And for 70 star, of course, also 16, you're not forced to do any segments in particular, except for the Bowser stages. You can just choose whatever star you're comfortable with to do blindfolded. And that's kind of what really attracted me about SM64 to do as a first 3D game. You can just choose what you want to do, basically.
I think before we can delve into the games, need to go into the techniques around blindfolded runs. Could you explain, for people who may not be aware, what normalization or normalized strats are?
Well, I used to have a very very direct answer to that, but normalization is basically a way of moving or a way of doing inputs in such a way that by doing the input, you move the character, your playable character, or the camera or something else in a very exact way. So, for example, when you imagine the 2D platformer, you hold right on the D-pad for a specific number of frames, and you're going to move to the right for a specific number of frames. That is not normalization, because, well, how are you going to know how many frames you hold right? It's too precise, you know, you can't feel that out. However, if you move to the right and you're going to hit a wall, then you know you're exactly at the wall. And so, of course, it gets more complicated when you optimize blindfolded runs for time. But, well, finding walls, finding corners so that you know exactly where you are. In Super Mario 64, for example, pressing, what's the button called? Like, well, camera buttons, I believe it's CR and CL. In the Bowser stages, will make the camera move exactly 45 degrees to the left or to the right. So then you know exactly where the camera is, that's normalized. But walking forward with the analog stick is not normalized, because you don't know how far you're going to be walking forward. Another way in 2D platformers, another example would be duck jumps. I use that a lot in the Donkey Kong Country games, and also a little bit in Super Mario World initially. So duck jumps, you hold down on the D-pad, so you duck, then hold left or right. So you're still ducking, but you're holding diagonally down. Then you just press and hold B to jump, or A, whatever the jump button is. And then you're going to land, and you're automatically going to duck. Not all platformers work like that, but a lot of platformers of the SNES and NES era do. So yeah, that's basically means that you're going to jump forward a fixed number of pixels. So you know the exact distance of the jump. In Donkey Kong Country games, you can do the same by ducking and then pressing Y. So that you're going to roll forward, at least with Donkey, you're rolling forward a fixed number of pixels into an exact position. And that's a good way to get into an exact position without using a wall, for example. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways for normalized movement, but those are some simple examples, I would say.
So the jump with Mario, that's pretty much the same as the walking, because the jump distance can vary so much without that, whether how early you jumped, how much you, or when you held right or left, of course.
Exactly. Like what I try to do in the Donkey Kong Country games before I figured out about normalization is to just So in SMW, in Super Mario World, you have a jump sound when you jump, but not when you land. In Donkey Kong Country, it's the opposite. You don't hear a jump, but when you land, you can hear it. However, what are you going to do? So you land, and then you hear the thud, the landing sound, and then you can stop moving, or you can stop holding right. But it's not going to be very precise, you know, and sometimes you just need... Very often, you just want that precision for precision platformers to just move exactly into the right position. So it's basically, you can combine it with sound cues, though. You can, for example, hold right, and then in the Donkey Kong Country, also in Super Mario World again, you can, if you have a power-up or you have two Kong members, then you can run or walk into an enemy, and the game is going to be temporarily frozen. And during those frames of being frozen, you can hear the hit sound, basically the sound effect, and then release the right button. And then you're going to be at the exact position that you touched the enemy, basically. So that's how you can do that.
You talked about rooting Super Mario 64, so would that then be trying to find as many normalized strats that you'd be going through as well as the easiest stars? First of all, is that correct?
Yes. Routing a game would be... In my case, I always have had documents writing down all the strats for doing all the segments, so that basically... I can show you, actually. It's... we're not going to be able to... Well, actually, I can pop it up and I can read it out for the podcast. I can quickly find one of my strats documents. Donkey Kong Country 2, for example, any percents. Let me quickly share this with you. So basically, every single level has, well, abbreviations. So for example, 1-1, it says start as Diddy. So that's something you need to know, which Kong member, Dixie or Diddy, to start with. Then it says FR 6.5, RODR, arrow, kill, X2. So it's kind of like a code language a little bit with abbreviations. So every input is separated with a comma. How do I define an input? It's basically just either tapping or holding a button or a button combination. If you scroll up to the top, you can see the notations, like the abbreviation. So FR would be forward. No, F means fast. R means right. 6.5 means 6.5 beats of the music. That's another way to know, not exactly, but approximately how far you're going to move is by using the music. We could talk about that later as well. Pretty important in blindfolded runs. So that would be one input, one input basically. And then RO would be roll, DR, hold down and right while rolling.
Just to give it a visual for people listening, so what I'm looking at is basically lines of text which have different abbreviations and numbers, and those abbreviations are then linked or provided as saying this is jump, this is walk forward, and then a numbers amount that then refer to how far to travel, or beats, I should say.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things you could write down, but the basic idea is just writing down abbreviations of inputs with code language.
When this routine, or as the routine is going on, is it concurrent with memorizing, or is the memorizing aspect a separate part?
Well, during the routing, during the stratting, you definitely memorize the strats as well to some degree, but I feel that really depends on the game. With 3D games, you would typically memorize the environment while you're stratting, while you're just being and going through the level, trying to figure out strats. Just memorizing roughly where the walls and the edges are, for example, that you could use. But for 2D games, it's definitely trickier to memorize the environment, especially like some of the levels that I did early on were the roller coaster stages in Donkey Kong Country 2. And those just have a roller coaster track that goes up and down and up and down, and that's about it. It's hard to memorize the exact layouts and then trying to know where you are in the game based on only sounds and music cues. I didn't do that. I did not memorize the tracks at all. What I did was to memorize numbers. If you could scroll down, you could see, for example, 4-4, start as Dixie. That is a roller coaster stage called Rickety Race. So what you do is just you hold, I just hold Y and right, I think that's about it. And then you jump after 6 beats in the music, then jump after 10, then 6, 5, 9, 1, 10, 3, etc. It goes on and on. It's about, I think, What is this, about 30, 40 inputs? So you just have to memorize strings of numbers. Now, that's what I did a lot early on. And I think it pays off in platformers to do it like that most of the time. But that's my personal strats. I know Bubsia uses it too, but he has a lot of different types of strats. Crystal Saver, when he ran Celeste, he used only muscle memory, as far as I'm aware, or mostly just, you know, sound cues and muscle memory together, not really listening to the music much, which is very different from what I did in Celeste. So that's interesting to see the vast differences between runners in that sense. All you really need to do is just to, you know, be a little bit creative with coming up with strats, but there's a lot of different ways actually to play games blindfolded usually.
So in these samples with the 2D platformers, these are memorizing string of numbers or string of inputs more specifically to then equate to get into the next stage or next level. Is it the same with 3D games memorizing a set of inputs, or is there a more remembering the layouts more so? Or is it still the same, like, input memorization at the forefront?
It's definitely a combination of the two with the 3D games that I've done, combining memorizing inputs with memorizing the layouts. And I would say, especially in 3D games, memorizing the inputs, if you just execute it, if you just practice it enough, you get muscle memory for that. And again, I want to stress that it's separate from, you know, some visual speedrunners have tried blindfolded and trying to go only by muscle memory from the visual speedrun and getting nowhere, or like not really succeeding in getting many starts, for example, in SM64, because you subconsciously you have to use something together with muscle memory to be able to do it. For visual runs, it would just be visual cues, I assume, and for blindfolded runs, it would be audio cues and music cues all the time. You get the muscle memory, and then memorizing the stages vaguely, or the stage layouts vaguely, helps also with gaining more muscle memory. It kind of goes hand in hand. Memorizing the inputs and the stage layouts together, sort of associative memory, I guess. And with 2D games, that would be harder to do in general. So when I did my Donkey Kong Country to 102% run, there was a moment, well, or like a moment, I think it was 3.5 hours that I got stuck on misremembering one single input in a late stage. And well, I was really scared that I was not going to be able to finish the run. I only did one run of that, 16 hours, I believe. And yeah, in the end, I did manage to get through by sort of trying a couple things out, I believe. And then suddenly remembering by dying or not dying in a very particular position after trying a couple things out, I remembered, okay, that's where a part of the spike of the wall was. And then I remembered, oh yes, that's why I had to do that input that I previously did not do. And then, well, then I suddenly remembered. So it kind of goes hand in hand.
Dying is sort of, or certain games can be quite helpful, so to speak. Like Celeste, for instance, you always respawn at the same point. So it's like you can reset your strats because you know you're always going to start in the same position.
Yes, that can be helpful. I would say in Celeste, most particularly. So Celeste has a system with very long levels, but with very short, very small, generally very small sections, rooms or checkpoints that are close set together. And so you get the checkpoint and then you can die and then you spawn at the checkpoint. So then you know exactly your position after dying. So that's a way of normalizing as well, technically. Not sure if that answers your question.
No, sorry, it was just a mention because it just reminded me from seeing others blindfolded runs.
Right, yeah. It is pretty common in games as well. Definitely a very useful backup as well.
What are the normal difficulty differences between different blindfolded runs?
Wow. What are the difficulty differences? So between the runs, well, it's hard to compare difficulty when it comes to different genres, but generally speaking, I would say that the 2D platformers I've done have been harder than the 3D games, and it probably has to do with memorization. Like I said, you don't, it's harder to memorize the environments for 2D games than for 3D games. So, and it's harder to think of backups. In a 2D platformer, you would just die immediately. As in the Donkey Kong Country games or Super Mario World, you would just fall in a pit if you'd make a misstep, if you mistime something, and then you just have to start the stage over. That is completely different in Ocarina of Time, for example. In Zelda games, you have to find your way back to safety or back to a spot where you know this is where I am. Now that sounds safe, but at the same time, if you're lost, then it's not as quick or not as easy to back up your position to get back to a safe spot or a safe position where you know exactly this is where I am. Whereas in 2D games, you can just die and you know you're back at the start and of a short stage. But generally speaking, 2D platformers are harder to execute and harder to memorize, but also safer in the case of failure. When you fail to remember something or execute something wrongly, you have simpler backups. So, but generally speaking, I don't know. I don't think 2D games are harder per se than 3D. It just depends on the game, really.
One big aspect is length, as well as you've done some incredibly long runs, such as your Zelda Ocarina of Time, which clocks at just under 17 hours, which
length is definitely, yeah. Like for speed, for optimization of speedruns, maybe doesn't play a big role, but well, if your run is not extremely well prepared and not super well optimized, then definitely getting super fatigued at the end of the run plays a big role in the difficulty.
I've got a couple of queries about this run in particular. My first one is, at what point was you confident to do a run, a full run?
Well, my first blindfolded run was actually 102% Donkey Kong Country 2. And so I did that too early. I overestimated how much I had internalized the strats. So, but I did it after, in over the course of the week prior to the full run, I had done runs of single sessions of World 1, 2, and 3 together, I believe, and then World 4, and then 5, and then 6 and 7 together, and then 8 separate again. So about 5 or 6 sections like that, all on separate days. So yeah, you just kind of make the chunks of memorization, the chunks of basically different subcategories that you run then as practice runs. You make them bigger and bigger. But yeah, I would say my longest runs were definitely underprepared. and then in the end, they were so long that I was scared to return to them. I couldn't get motivated for Donkey Kong Country for 102% to do that ever again because of how long it took and how exhausting it was. But any percent I did optimize, it was a lot of fun.
I've only done a very small amount of blindfolded stuff, like several minutes at most with the bosses of particular games. And just during those small sections, found quite tiring mentally. I was interested in if that's something you experienced as well, which I like in the length of these runs. And if so, how did you just build on that from experience or from just continuously doing the runs?
Honestly, I did not build on it too much. It is indeed very, very exhausting and tiring. It's not something that I realized at all when I stratted my first game, that the runs would be so exhausting. It's like up to the 1 hour mark, it's all fine. And then if you just do a practice run or you forget something, you're like, okay, maybe we could just try again right away. But if a run gets past, I would say, the 4 or 5 hour mark, you definitely don't want to do one more run per day or per 2 or 3 days, because it just, you know, you're so exhausted afterwards and all you want to do is just eat and sleep after a long run. Practicing has always been very relaxing to me, not exhausting or stressful at all, but actually doing a full run. At some point after doing a couple of blindfold runs, I just knew, I expected it. I fully knew what was going to happen mentally and just kind of embraced it. Another aspect that plays a big role in that sense is taking breaks during the run, which I personally never did. And I don't want to say it's a norm, but at the same time, it kind of is for most blindfolded runners. The thing is just that most people don't do super long runs. Most people would just want to optimize a speed run or optimize a run, not for the sake of just doing it fast, but for the sake of just doing it within a reasonable time spectrum, I would say. For example, I believe Parisian Player, who does A Link to the Past blindfolded, at some point he said he wanted to definitely not get past the 9 or 10 hour mark, because first of all, that would mean that it's a bad run and he would want to do it again anyway then. But also because it's just really unhealthy, because it is unhealthy to not take breaks, to not drink and eats pretty much at all during the runs. And that was my personal choice to go down that route of, well, I believe I had 2 glasses of water doing for my Ocarina of Time run, and maybe just 1 for the Donkey Kong Country 2 102% run.
Which is not... In 17 hours, just for clarity.
Sorry?
In 17 hours, just for clarity, just yes, a yeah, couple exactly. glasses of water. Yeah,
both runs were about 16, 17 hours. A couple cookies. I actually had a plate of herring on crackers for the Ocarina of Time run, and they were pretty much untouched even.
Absolutely gorging there.
This is not something that I want to recommend to anybody. Mm. It's not healthy, and it's kind of, at the same time, it made me hesitant to actually do much more of the same runs, because it was going to be the same experience, and hesitant to optimize speed runs, and in that sense, it's my... personal interest has just been challenge runs of really long games or categories. That's just been kind of my thing, to just route or strat something for a couple weeks and then really intensively, and then just do 1 run and then that's it. Whereas a lot of other speedrunners or blindfolded runners would just take it easy with the stratting and just really gradually, well, just prepare everything super well until they can do a final or a first full run in a reasonable time. And then, well, gradually optimize it after that and not stress it out with just doing everything single session at first, at least.
I'm interested just a small bit on the no breaks thing to do with, mm-hmm. like, there can be cases where even if you start at the same position, people might say, oh, you can look at your items or where you positioned or anything like that. But just wondering, in cases of, like, Celeste or Odyssey, where you're outside, like, you're in an overworld kind of thing, mm-hmm. Before you're in the actual levels, or... in the 3Ds, you're potentially in a cutscene. I'm just wondering, do some people take those as exceptions? Just that's the thought that comes to mind of yes. places where you can, like, take a drink or have a quick sec, so to speak.
Yes, I mean, in the end, the thing with blindfolded speedruns in particular is that most games probably just have 1 runner, and the categories that have multiple runners, multiple people running the same category, are usually short, so then you don't really have to take breaks. And then usually the rules for that speedrun category, for the blindfolded category, is that you can't take breaks. But other than that, it's really a personal choice. You know, I wouldn't say we have standards on that. First of all, maybe I should have mentioned that before. There's a blindfolded community, not just for single games, but for blindfolded runners in general. We have a Discord. It's called the Blindfolded Brotherhood, founded in 2016. And we do have a website as well, Blindfold. I need to double check this just to not mention the wrong site here, blindfoldedgaming.com, where we list all the blindfolded runs that we can find online. And we do have separate categories. I think there's currently, let me check, yeah, there's 3 different classifications: complete versus segmented versus individual levels. So individual levels would be not a full game, just like single session, short, single worlds, or longer levels or boss fights, for example. Complete would be a full game and single session. Segmented would be in multiple sessions, so there's different categories for that. Now, I'm not super aware of what the current consensus is on what is single session. Can you take breaks or not? Because we used to have single session and no breaks versus single session with breaks, which means you cannot take lengthy breaks, but, like, if you want to go to the toilet or drink something, or just, you know, with Twitch streams, you want to chat a little bit and just chill out for like 5 minutes while you're in some sort of hub worlds, for example, or like a level select screen in the game. Yeah, but definitely the same goes for segmented runs. What we're not fine with, what we've never been fine with, is just using breaks to look up strats, for example, or to know your position, obviously.
Yeah. What's some difficulties of blindfolded runs that might not be immediately obvious?
Ones that might not be immediately obvious. Definitely the thing with being super exhausted after not too long. Yeah, you cannot compare doing a 5-hour blindfolded run to just a 5-hour speedrun or live stream, for example. The difficulties that people are not aware of. I think people tend to underestimate the difficulty of a 2D game and overestimate. People would say a 3D that's much more complex. Yes, but it definitely, the complexity of a 3D game also has advantages. In the end, if you really want to optimize a blindfolded speedrun, you definitely get a lot of muscle memory for fast-paced games. And then it doesn't matter anymore. But for learning, 3D has a lot more... there's a lot more visual cues that you can use to internalize, to kind of think of when stratting. Yeah, so that sometimes people have the wrong thoughts about what games might be doable or not. I do not believe, for example, that a game like Diddy Kong Racing would be viable. You could finish a lap or a track, but like winning races, winning all the races, finishing the game actually, because of the, yeah, well, you have to be fast. That's not an issue on its own, but you have to just steer in very precise ways all the time and deal with the RNG of other racers, yeah. And the steering is typically non-normalized, because if you find a wall, you bonk against it, you lose a lot of speed. So that's one thing. Tetris, you know, games with a lot of RNG, that's definitely a run killer. Or like it kills the possibility of doing a run at all, usually.
Or I guess make it potentially so tedious that no one would want to run it if there's a huge amount of
yeah,
RNG.
Yeah, or that, yeah. Yeah, we shouldn't speak about something not being possible, but like not reasonably viable, I would say, is the better way to call it.
Was there any runs that you went and strategized or tried to route out, but then ended up having a certain level or certain aspect that then caused it to fall into that category?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
Was there any runs or games that you went into the process of routing or strategizing for that ended up falling into that category due to a level or a particular spot or just the whole game potentially in general?
Right, yeah. There are certain games, I do think I have a list of that as well. Let me check and I can talk about. I have like a document listing abandoned projects that I checked but did not finish in the end. Banjo-Kazooie, which I would not say that game is not possible, but more recently, because I checked it a couple of years ago, more recently, a skip has been found in an area called Furnace Fund, which is a quiz board with RNG. I believe it's RNG question answers, RNG questions. And so you just need to get really, really, really lucky. But a skip has been found that might make it possible. But still, it's a late game section right before the final boss. And then again, I don't know if the final boss is doable. The rest of the game would be most likely doable. But so yeah, RNG plays a big role there in the late game, that you have to play the entire game, which will take many, many hours. And then you have to hit the big RNG section, which might make it possible 1% or 10% of the time. So that's one thing. And then another thing in Banjo-Kazooie is that you have to collect a lot of notes in each level. How the stages are pretty large. 3D environments, there's 100 notes per stage. I believe to finish any percent, you need to collect, well, over 90% of notes at least. Not sure how many exactly, but that means if you die once in a stage, which can easily happen if you make a misstep, you lose all the notes and you have to do the entire stage over again, which would be, or those 9 main stages in the game, it would be a huge time loss. So that's just a huge risk to take, and that really prevented me and probably other people too from running that. Cuphead, which has been done, blindfolded individual sections, but I do not believe currently that, well... I'm saying this, but I have to double check it right away because Cuphead certainly might be doable in a single session. The thing with Cuphead is the inputs, which speedrunners are used to, I would say, but there's a lot of mashing involved, mashing buttons all the time, or just pressing buttons really, really rapidly at a specific rhythm all the time throughout the entire game. There's a lot of different reasons that you could think of that just make a game really unfun or barely viable or extremely stressful. I did not want to go down that route. I really prefer single short sections that are difficult on their own, but you have infinite chances basically to do them.
Yeah, I've got a bit of experience with Cuphead on the no damage side. And just some of the bosses, I'm just thinking now would be absolutely horrendous trying to do blindfolded.
Yeah, exactly. It has been done though. I'm reading the website right now. MultiLuigi 100 has done all bosses individually, regular, legacy. So that's not the most difficult category, I believe. Like normal category. Yeah. Well, Cuphead is a very fun game, but blindfolded, it's just the factor of RNG makes it very heavy as well. Makes it very. Very grindy, but it doesn't mean it makes it impossible. Then, like I mentioned, Diddy Kong Racing and other Mario Kart 64, other racing games, because of how wired degree of precision is just too much. Luigi's Mansion, because it has been done blindfolded, but I don't like the sound effects, the omnipresent sound effects of Luigi just moaning all the time. That is a good reason to not want to do a game blindfolded. You just don't like certain aspects of it. You gotta really be into it. You gotta really enjoy it, you know. That's very important.
So that's more on the mental side of not want to drive you insane from the noise.
Exactly. More a personal thing.
Just on the technical side, I've just had a thought. How do you have a method or a mod, I guess, in case the game freezes? So this was done on a stream when you ran the blindfolded runs. Did you have if the stream crashed or if the game freezed, did you have a method of be notified about it?
Not for all runs, but in the Blindfolded Brotherhoods community, you know, that's one of the things that it's for, is we have we can be on voice call and then have somebody in particular or a moderator off the Discord server just be able to call you at any time, and obviously they cannot use it to give you information, because then it would be an assisted run, which, well, it's not really a speedrun then, of course. It has happened actually right in the middle of the Donkey Kong Country 2 102% run that Pong called me and told me that the stream, but it was nothing with the game, but my live stream, which I was stupid and did not record it locally. I didn't know it was a thing back then. So it's my stream crashed and just went back online automatically. So that's something that happens. In one of my Mario 64 70 star runs, after about 2.5 hours, I was on Royal PB pace, and the emulator crashed. I was on emulator back then. It just crashed. I had no clue why. And it never did in the same section after that. And I was not on the lifeline in the Discord and the voice call, so that was that. But yeah, there's a possible backup. The thing is just that I didn't want to take my blindfold off, because then it would be a segmented run. So it would still be bummer if you have to do something like hardware setup wise to restart the game, for example.
Is there anything else you want to talk about blindfolded wise before we move into Kaizo?
I think we discussed a lot of, well, maybe another way, we've talked about normalization, and I would say another main method, one of the two main methods that I use to route the games, or routes especially 2D platformers, is using the music. And that was, that is much more pleasant, I would say, than to memorize strings of numbers, is to memorize it together with specific music cues. And that was possible in the roller coaster stages of DKC2, for example. But then again, Portal has barely any rhythmic music, so then you cannot use it there. But yeah, it can be super useful to just hear the rhythm of the music and know exactly after, I'm snapping my fingers, maybe a little bit too loudly into the mic, but sort of, you know, picture a metronome, and then you're gonna go like 1, 2, 3, and then jump after 3, jump after 5, etc.
So what would be an example of a game or a level where that sound cues was more useful than inputs, or was useful for?
Well, definitely the roller coaster stages in DKC2. Like, I use only the music and not muscle memory, because it's only pressing B at the exact right times. So you cannot really use muscle memory for that. Not sound cues either, which are generally not precise at all in blindfolded runs. Yeah, it's just something that a lot of people would not think of. I would say, when you think of a blindfolded speedrun, most people would think, oh, speedrun, visual speedrun, muscle memory plus sound cues, that's what we use. But it's really not like that. Normalization and music cues are maybe the two most important strats that at least I and a lot of other runners have used. So yeah, that's that.
Yeah, I think there was a Super Mario 64 runner, Nobori, is that correct?
Yes.
Saw a video of him on one of his runs where he's like nodding his head to the soundtrack or the music of Mario 64 to line up particular jumps or inputs. So it's super interesting.
Exactly. I think all Mario 64 runners do that. Or I have to say, Bubsy, for example, did not do it with his first run. He had completely different strats for the first run, not using the music much, but he did have a music cue, which is not counting the rhythm, but a very particular part of the music, a very particular instrument starting to play And then he knew in the final master stage where the platform would be. But now it's super much more optimized. And I think he has like a 30 minutes flat or something PB in 16 star. And back then it was over 3 hours, just to give you a point of reference.
Oh, it's insane stuff. Like, say, the doing the challenge itself is impressive enough, but then the focus to then keep at it until it's 2.5 hours quicker.
Yeah, Bubsy has definitely, with SM64, he probably that's probably the most optimized, or the most, like, compared to the starting point of where he started, and then optimizing it throughout the years on and on like that at different stages. Yeah, I think it's very impressive to see. I've never really had that level of motivation to keep at it at the same game, I would say.
You mentioned you have the website of various blindfolded or blindfolded runs that have been found. What's the maddest, or let's say, run that you've seen being done?
Wow. that is a really hard question to answer. Yeah.
Or maybe multiple might be easier.
Well, single runs, I have a very hard time answering that question, I have to say. I just really enjoy seeing so many different genres that we maybe previously didn't think was going to be possible being done blindfolded. So many different games, but there are many games that I just have no clue about because I never played them or I never tried to route them, and then I have no clue how difficult or how much time the runner spent on it. But for example, I have not played Sekiro at all. I have played a couple of Souls games, Dark Souls 1, 2, 3, and it always seemed somewhat similar. And then Dark Souls, I tried to route it a bit. It's incredibly complex. The RPG sort of leveling up system with all the different items and weapons and stuff you can use, different types of characters, lack of clear music and sound cues for boss fights, together with them being response heavy. I honestly do not know about RNG, how big the factor is, how manipulable they are. But yeah, Sekiro, it always seemed to me like a similar thing. So I'm very impressed that was apparently completely viable in the end.
We'll move on to Mario Kaiser, which is your current focus. Could you explain what Kaizo is, or Mario Kaizo means?
So Kaizo is a... Kaizo, literally, it's a Japanese word. I believe it literally means hacked or modified. So we're talking about ROM hacks of the original Super Mario World, which is basically where Kaizo originates. So the original Kaizo Mario World is a ROM hack of Super Mario World's bad. I believe it's from 2007. It's very old. Only more recently, roughly 6 or 5 years ago, Kaizo has started to become a lot more popular from the perspective of people actually playing them without the use of save states. So Kaizo hacks, it's a type of ROM hack. It's basically, in the modern sense, means level design that focuses on levels being beaten in a very particular intended way, rather than the original Super Mario World, where you can jump over or under an enemy, you can ignore it, you don't need it for anything, you can fly over the level, whatever you want. Kaizo hacks basically force the player to move in a very particular, precise way, technically. Not all hacks are to the extreme end of that, but some hacks are extremely precise, some are more puzzly. There's definitely a big spectrum, sub-spectrum of Kaizo hacks going on still, but the general idea is that you are supposed to play the levels in a very particular intended way.
An example that might be useful, people have played, Celeste mentioned earlier, of the seasides, which are done like in a pretty particular way, and their difficulty is like heightened. I think that might be a good example in comparison between a standard Mario level and what Kaizo is, and then just add more difficulty as well in some cases.
Yeah, exactly. So Celeste would be definitely a good good example of a game, and also Super Meat Boy, for example. Modern games that are more or less Kaizo in nature, even the A sides of Celeste, although they're not nearly as precise as the C sides, they kind of follow that idea of you have to move in a rather particular way through the stages. They're not very linear with all the secrets, optional collectibles, but the main path is linear. You are supposed to move from one side of the screen to the other in a way that you use the obstacles rather than them being threats for the most part. And I think that's one of the core concepts of Kaizo design. So using, for example, in Super Mario World, enemies are not supposed to be avoided. you have to jump on them. Very often you have to jump off an enemy in a very particular way, on the right edge or on the left edge of them, just a regular standard example.
What are the difficulties or strats included in a Kaizo level that a casual playthrough of Super Mario might not encounter?
Well, the lack of choice. The lack of the player being able to choose how to go through that level, like I said. Definitely a big degree of precision involved in most modern hacks. Basically, playing a Kaizo hack is a test of not just long-term muscle memory that you have for typical types of setups in Super Mario World, but also just a skill test or a test of knowledge of the game's engine, I would say. That said, Kaizo hacks tend to be inspired by each other, and we've seen waves of certain subgenres within Kaizo, for example, the past couple of years after, I would say, most... well, there's a hack called Invictus and another hack called Grand Prix World 2. You might have heard of them. I would say those two hacks have been very influential when it comes to modern Kaizo design, which is focused on very fast-paced platforming combined with item tricks like shell jumps, which you see in Mario Maker a lot, but in Kaizo design in SMW definitely plays a big role in most modern design as well. Creativity when it comes to setups, not so much when it comes to level elements that might not be relevant. A lot of standard hacks would focus more on cool looking environments, or rather than cleverly placed obstacles that you have to maneuver in a very particular way.
For you, what makes a good Kaizo level?
I would say number one, creativity. Just the a creator just having some sort of general idea and working it out in interesting ways. General idea when it comes to level design. Some hacks are visually very uninteresting, or let's say plain vanilla Super Mario World with ugly palette changes. You see that a lot, but they might have a very entertaining level design, as in levels that are fun to execute input wise, that just feel good, that have a good flow, the way that, for example, levels in Celeste might feel good to execute all the time. There's a good reason that's a popular speedrun for example. The aesthetics, obviously, visuals, custom visuals, custom music. Some people compose music for their own hacks, and that goes for standard hacks just as well as Kaizo, I would say. Yeah, just really interesting new iterations of setups that we have seen a lot in other hacks, but then creators thinking about new setups, thinking about the same setups in different ways that we've never seen before. Just like setups that kind of wow you, that might not be too interesting to execute, but that are, well, I would say novel in a way that Nintendo never intended people to play the game. That's one of the fun aspects about Kaizo, as opposed to standard hacks, is that it's a lot of it is about exploiting the game engine in the same way that speedruns might do that, but then actually making levels with those exploits that might have been found for speedruns in the first place or for TASs. So I would say it's all about creativity, and it can be manifested in many, many different ways.
As I said, this is your main focus to complete a certain amount, which you'll have to explain, as I wasn't 100% sure. But also, what is the appeal of Kaizo that makes it the main focus or for you or enjoy?
Let me first mention that so I used to do a lot of blindfolded runs and then switch to Kaizo, and like why did I decide to do that? I think the main reason is because of how much it means to me to be a community member of the Kaizo community, and how much more interaction you have with people while doing Kaizo playthroughs and speedruns, and sharing experiences with other people who, with blindfolded runs, obviously we have the blindfolded community, which is awesome, but we kind of all do, like each runner does their own individual game, and not a whole lot of blindfolded runs have multiple runners. And while doing a blindfolded run, you're not going to interact with chats or with other people, and you're just completely alone in your own bubble, and that becomes, to me, that kind of becomes stale at a point and becomes stressful. And I kind of wanted to move on. And, well, the Kaizo community is just growing and growing still. And It's to me, what's very valuable is sharing gameplay experiences, but also creative experiences, just like, you know, making a level or making a hack and then watching other people play that. And then those people making their own hack and you play it. That sort of interaction you don't find a whole lot with playing well, doing speedruns or playing casually or whatever. I find that very special about Kaizo and the Kaizo community.
Yeah, something I found interesting whilst doing research and watching some of these Kaizo levels, it has the same appeal in a sense of speedrunning, in the sense of there's the instant grasp of something impressive's going on. For instance, one of the videos I watched of yours was Interstellar, which is a Kaizo level, and this first level just looks insane from my perspective, being a noob in this kind of thing, and you're doing it first try with like shell jumps and sort of like taking it in immediately. And I guess that's from a sense of obviously practice and recognizing similar things from other levels, I guess, and just being able to just thrash through it, so to speak.
Interstellar is an interesting example because it's very much, so it's a very shell jump focused hack indeed. I think it's a very good hack that really focuses heavily on setups being recognizable for blind reads. And then you just, how do you say that? You just see the position of a wall and you have a shell. You know you have to toss it into the wall to jump over. That's a very simple example. Of course, the setups get a lot more complex than that.
It's like intuitive like level,
yes,
design.
It's all about intuition in that sense, yeah. But on the other hand, there's a lot of hacks that do the complete opposite, that just want to throw people out of their comfort zone. And some of them are very unfun to execute or to just play through, but you're very happy that you beat them. And then, you know, Kaizo's not all about having fun. It's just about the challenge to a big degree. And the same goes for blindfolded runs to me. So there's definitely some sort of analogy when it comes to that. And speed runs are obviously not always fun in general. But then when you reach your goal, you're super happy about it. It's a psychological effect, I guess, that in a way you don't see a lot in a lot of different games in their natural state. Games are not naturally designed for the most part to have the player struggle for lengthy periods of time on small sections and then feeling very satisfied after they beat them after hours. Of course, you have the Soul series that kind of plays with that a little bit more than most games, but just a quick example. But yeah, for the most part, we have to, gamers want to take more out of video games than the games provide to players in their base form. And I think there are many different ways to do that. Speedrunning obviously has been popular for many years now, but there are definitely other ways, like other types of challenge runs to make the same games continuously fun.
If you could recommend, if someone wanted to get into Kaizo levels, what would be some hacks or levels that you would recommend?
If you want to get into Kaizo hacks, so first of all, I would say play the original game, play vanilla as Super Mario World. that especially goes for people who are interested in Kaizo, who come from Mario Maker 1 or 2. It's important to get used to the physics because they're quite different than Mario Maker, even though the game looks very similar. But after that, if you want to dive into Kaizo, I would say Baby Kaizo Worlds, Cute Kaizo Worlds. Those would be two really really good beginner-friendly hacks that you could play early on. Quickie World 2 is a very popular one. But don't be mistaken, I played Quickie World 1, which is slightly harder than 2. It took me 10 hours for about 15 levels to beat that hack. So it's still very, very challenging. But then I just want people to think of Kaizo not so much as, you know, the easiest hacks are going to be easy and they're going to, yep, just gently introduce me to Kaizo. They're still Kaizo hacks and you're still going to struggle very hard with them. It's basically the core concept of those hacks still, but at the same time they teach you very very common types of setups in the simplest possible ways.
And one hack that you sent me prior to today was the, I'm gonna mispronounce this, for Momoku.
I also don't know how to pronounce it.
Momoku, yeah. For people listening, which was, I believe, a Kaizo hack designed to be played blindfolded, correct?
Exactly, yeah. I thought it was a super cool concept The hack on its own is, for Kaizo standards, very easy. It might be among the five easiest hacks out there for Kaizo design, but the actual Kaizo experience about it would be to do strats and play and finish it blindfolded. I found it very interesting to... So I played that after I did my blindfolded runs of Super Mario World Vanilla of 11 Exit, and I found it very interesting to see how in Momoku Mario World you can use the same types of techniques of finding walls, duck jumping to jump a fixed distance forward, timing with beat counts for underwater swimming, you know, stuff like that. But at the same time, it very much feels like a Kaizo hack, even when you're playing it blindfolded, because it's, the type of level design is very straightforward and very, very much forced for you to do the exact inputs the way that they're intended. So that's not very much the case with vanilla Super Mario World or other platformers. Usually, you have to really be creative to work or to find the safest, the most optimal ways to move through the levels, rather than just the level forcing you to do it in a specific way. And there are more examples of levels, I would say, in Kaizo hacks that you don't have to play them blindfolded. But for example, there's a level in an infamously hard Kaizo hack called Super Responsible Worlds. The level, it's a funny name, but the meme is that if you finish the hack, you're finally responsible enough to live a real life. Or something like that. It's a level called Pitch Dark Grotto, which is two very long sections in pitch dark. You cannot see the walls. You cannot see ceiling or death pits. Yeah, and you just have to find a way to play that in the dark, completely blind. And it's, it's nonsense. But at the same time, it's a very interesting challenge. And I think that's kind of what a lot of Kaizo is like. It's kind of unethical nonsense design, but we still like it. We still play it. We still find ways to beat it.
It sounds like the ROM hack designers are potentially quite sadistic in their naming choices, as you mentioned, like cute or responsible or quick. It's just all these nice, pleasant names for you to go into, and then
cute and baby Kaizo World. They're definitely. Supposed to be, cute and babyish for Kaizo standards, but still it's kind of a pun, of course, because they're not actually that cute or for babies, so to say.
Cut into still aspects of Kaizo, but obviously blindfolded as well. What is it about live streaming that you enjoy doing or enjoy continuing to do so?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer with one... In a single sentence, I would say, what is it that I like about live streaming in general when it comes to Kaizo is the routine of constantly playing. Well, every day you do a live stream, I would play basically the same game. So it's familiar. I'm familiar with the type of inputs with the game engine, Super Mario World, but it's a different version of the same game every time. My goal is to beat as many Kaizo hacks as possible as I can find. So there's the majority of them are on Super Mario, smwcentral.net, which is a big resource site for SMW hacking. Well, I'm well on my way, but still, there's a couple of really, really hard hacks left that will take me weeks to beat each. And it's just the thrill of sometimes also hacks that have not been beaten by anyone. Just the thrill of just maybe you're the first person, or maybe it might not even be RTA viable, and still trying to go for it, still trying to find things out. And that's kind of the same way I went in it with blindfolded as well. It's just not knowing exactly whether a game will be doable blindfolded, but you're still going to try to puzzle, to figure things out. That's not exactly what your question was about. What do I like about live streaming, Kaizo in particular, is I would say the routine and just it is, as opposed to blindfolded runs, it is very relaxing. You wouldn't tell it when you see somebody play a Kaizo hack, but in the end, it's all about getting... For most hacks, it's all about getting muscle memory for doing the same section over and over and over until you beat it. And that has some sort of almost therapeutic aspect to it of just, you know, it's very relaxing just doing the same thing over and over. While you're not blindfolded, you can also talk to people who share the same interests of playing Kaizo hacks. It's just that. It's I find playing Kaizo more relaxing than playing some random easy casual game on stream, because then I don't know the game. I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know what to say. I don't know. That's just kind of puts me out of my comfort zone. And Kaizo is very much just the same game over and over again, but in completely different creative ways all the time.
So with that website, is it open submission then? If like people can just submit their ROM hacks, even if there's no like verification of if they're able to be completed, not even by the designer?
There is verification, actually. People can submit their ROM hack, but there's a team of moderators currently, I believe 4 or 5 Kaizo moderators who would typically play the hacks on live stream as well, and just to check if they're viable and to check if they meet the minimum standards. As some hacks are broken, some hacks might be excessively ugly, or they might have visual errors. They get rejected. They will not be featured on the site, but generally the great majority of hacks are featured in the end, but they're always checked. Yeah, the same goes for standard hacks, which we call standard versus Kaizo. It's pretty much standard means non-Kaizo.
So like, just to give like the Mario Maker example, it'd just be like a different kind of Mario Maker level as opposed to one that's designed to make people pull their hair out kind of thing.
Pretty much that, yeah. Well, it's not so much about pulling your hair or having your hair pulled out, but that's the basic core idea of it. And I would say so. The masochistic aspect of it. But a big difference to Mario Maker in that sense is that Mario Maker is about single levels. And Kaizo hacks are typically multiple, up to like 100 levels. Most hacks are about 15, 20, 25 levels, a typical hack. And Mario Maker, I don't know honestly if there is how much of sort of quality control there is with Mario Maker, but for sure you don't submit your level to a moderation team before other people can play it, pretty much, or before it gets featured. So yeah, it's very much a community thing, yeah, with SMW in that sense. Our community has definitely grown over the years, and we have so many different people who have different skill sets from the creator point of view. Some people spend ages to make music ports for other hacks. They don't make hacks themselves, but that's their passion. They make music for SMW with the SNES sound chip. Some people make graphics for SMW hacks. Some people make code custom bosses all the time, custom sprites. So each hack is very much a community thing in that sense as well. And you would see lengthy credits, just like the credits of a hack featuring dozens of people having contributed to that hack in a practical sense, just like the vanilla game has credits of dozens of people having worked on that.
Before I go to some quick questions, last thing I'd go to, if so we mentioned about like starter Kaizo levels, but if someone wanted to get involved with the community, is there a Discord or somewhere else they can go to find out more about it?
About Kaizo, well, we do have a Kaizo Discord. I'm not sure how I could link it to you.
If you send me a link, I could put in the description of this video or in the Spotify, it will be in the description as well.
Yeah, we can do that. There's also an SMW Central Discord, which is not just for hacks, but I mean, SMW Central is, of course, the resource site for SMW hacking, listing hacks, but also all sorts of other types of resources. They have a forum and they also have a Discord server, which is very, very active. There's a couple thousand members, I think. in the Discord.
If you had one piece of advice of someone who wanted to go into a blindfolded run or wanted to start on a game, what piece of advice would that be?
First of all, that's yeah, already just a piece of its own. Okay. Oh, it is so difficult to talk about this without going on and on about related topics. But
it's fine.
Make sure you enjoy the game casually, or the speedrun or whatever. Make sure you really like the game. You like the sounds and the music. That really pays off. Because if you're not going to see, if the game is really pretty, but you're not going to see it and it has no music, it's going to sound silence, and you're, I don't know, just think about that when you start a game or when you want to run something blindfolded but you haven't chosen the game yet. That's an important thing to think about. Be realistic and make sure that you're not wasting your time or weeks trying to strats or trying to route out a game for a blindfold run that will turn out to not be viable in the end, and then you're wasted your time because you can't do any full runs, theoretically. At least that would be my advice. That is what I always did when starting to check a game, is to check the most difficult sections first, or early on at least, and just so you can get a good idea of whether or not it might all be possible to do blindfolded.
If one game could be released tomorrow, either announced, unannounced, or a sequel to a game you don't think will ever exist, what game would it be?
Completely separate of the blindfolded or Kaizo topic.
It can be anything.
The one thing I can think of right now would be Metroid Prime 4. I love the Metroid Prime series, and I don't know if there will ever be a 4, but yeah, that would be, you know, there have been talks of it being in development, and then, oh no, it's been scrapped, maybe not. I'm very excited to see it one day, and final answer.
There's been a recent Metroid been released, hasn't there? Did you enjoy that, or have you tried?
I haven't played it yet, actually. I do think I will in the near future. Yeah, definitely excited to check that one out. I do have to say it's a 2D game, and I've never been too big on the 2D Metroids, at least not so much the Prime series.
There's a large aspect of mentality in regard to challenge runs, some of which we've got into. Could you tell me a time when a run was taking its toll, and how you got past it?
So we're talking about during the run, run taking its toll, in the sense of me getting stuck during the run.
More so in regard to with challenge runs, it can be an extended period of time, and people have difficulties in terms of struggling with the fact that they might have thought they should have got it already, or difficulties during the run that they may not get. Like in speedrunning, they might not get the PB that they want. In hitless, they should have got a run early, and there can be those sort of difficulties. I'm just interested if that's happened during blindfolded runs, and if so, what occasion was that?
Well, as when it comes to goals that I wanted to achieve and have not achieved, or got close but did not achieve, well, definitely my the first run of Mario 64 was a big failure. It took me about 16 and a half, I believe, hours to get to 69 stars. And people thought I did that on purpose because of the number, but no, I actually forgot some strats on the very last star. That was 70 star category. And then I waited a week, I rested a week, and did end up beating the game, the 70 star, the next week. But that's so I did end up beating it. If we're talking about, here's the thing, I try to make sure for blindfolded projects that a game will be doable and will most likely happen, as in me doing at least a run of it, before doing all of the stratting. I just play through the game a couple times, and then try to think about global strats of like, this really should work here, this should be hard, this should be easy, and then check the hard portion, the hard parts first. But, well, there are runs that I stratted, actually a couple that I stratted completely and then did not end up doing a run. That is, for example, Super Mario World 96 exits, so 100% of the game. I still want to do that in the future, maybe next year, because, well, there's no reason why it should not be viable. The thing is, it will be very painful to run, not so much because of the length, but because of the factor of RNG with certain boss fights. Ori in the Blind Forest, I completely routed and never did a run after stratting, or after practicing a couple sections. Portal 2, yeah, also Majora's Mask. full, like, spend about 2-3 weeks stratting that. I never did a run. So the thing with that, I wouldn't say I regret it, but I am looking back on the whole blindfolded collection of blindfolded projects as me just really enjoying the stratting, but then not getting myself to actually do the runs in the end because of lack of, I wouldn't say motivation, but just sort of fear of, this will be very stressful, I really have to focus on doing only this and not playing other games. I have to reserve time for it. Well, usually I do them during holidays and during when I can take like a long weekend off. You know, you just have to kind of plan everything out like that, and it gets very complex and pretty stressful. And especially if you end up stratting a game for a couple weeks, then you're really into it, and then it's easy to burn out of it before you even start the practice. So that's kind of an obstacle that for big runs, for longer runs, I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who has to struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah, I predominantly do hitless or no damage runs, and one of the funnest parts for me is the strats making of it, and sometimes the run part can be like the run part is obviously still enjoyable, but it can also be like the interest of stratting a new run or a new game can sometimes be more so than the actual completing the run itself.
I can totally see that. Yeah, it has been the same for me. It goes the same for blindfold of runs and damageless, or also some Kaizo hacks. For example, I have checked a couple of Kaizo hacks that I thought might be viable, and then in the end there's going to be a late level that might not be viable. How much time do you want to spend on actually stratting it in the first place, and then how much time do you want to spend on actually doing the attempts until after 10 or 20 or more hours you just decide, okay, this is first of all not fun, secondly I don't have the time, thirdly it might not be possible at all. It's very difficult sometimes to decide on such things when it comes to all sorts of challenge runs. But that's part of the charm of it as well, is that it's not all set in stone, you know. It's challenge runs like that are different from speedruns, I would say, in that a speedrun can just be any sort of playthrough of a game that's, well, not your first playthrough, that will be faster than your previous, might be faster than your previous playthrough, trying to go fast at least, that or a timed run. You could call that a speedrun. And, well, speedruns are normally, if you just want to finish a run, you can finish a run. You will not have a PB every single run, but yeah, the main goal of speedruns in that sense is different than challenge runs, which is to just finish at all for the most part.
Yeah, it's one of the appeals of these sort of runs, the like finality or finite of it, as opposed to speedrunning, where it has the potential to be like forever improvement aspect, which appeals to some people, but not potentially to me.
I think that's definitely an important aspect of it, the finiteness versus the, well, I'd like to say, or I'd like to think of it as setting a very clearly defined goal versus a more sort of, I wouldn't want to call it an artificial goal. Speedrunning is not any more artificial than a challenge run, of course. You play the game in a way that you want to play it, and you thought of that way yourself, so that's artificial, rather than just taking the game as it is and beating it the way it is. But yeah, the finiteness is not for everybody, and it might appeal to some people particularly because of how something can go on and on and on. And for me, that in a way, that's the case with playing Kaizo hacks, because new Kaizo hacks are being made every time, every day, pretty much, or at least a couple per week. So there might be a time where there will be less hacks to play, but it will still continue. And the same goes with speedruns. You might reach a goal, you might reach a PB that you wanted to reach, or world record or whatever, and then somebody else will beat it, and you'll have to get back to work after that. And some people are never lose motivation in that sense, and that's, I find that admirable. I would not be able to continuously do the same run of the same game for a lengthy period of time. But in the end, yeah, it's about finiteness versus like a clear definition of a type of run you want to do. This is exactly the run I want to finish versus this is a run that I want to finish in a particular time, and then it's better if I go, if I'm even faster, and it's not good if I don't reach it.
If I said most hyped or celebrated moment on stream, on your stream, what would be the moment that comes to mind?
Oh wow. most celebrated, that is a good point, moment on stream. I would think of the blindfold. Well, I did just get partnered on Twitch a couple days ago, so that was pretty hype, I would say. But at the same time, that was not during stream. On stream, I would say it's, wow. Here's the thing with blindfolded runs. Some of the runs that I've done were extremely long and tiring in such a way that the only thing I could feel at the end was relief. and I don't see that as a positive thing, because you really want to be happy in the moment. You want to celebrate that you finished a really hard run.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maybe I would say my first one, Donkey Kong Country 2, 102% still. It's probably still the hardest run that I've done, the most memory heavy. So probably that one. Or maybe Super Mario 64, my first completed run. I remember a lot of people watching particularly that run. And yeah, it was, the funny thing is that during the practice and during the routing, only a few members of the blindfolded community came to watch and talk about it. And we were just kind of like hanging out, in our own little bubble of blindfolded runs. And then during the run, suddenly all sorts of people from all sorts of different gaming communities came out to watch that. And that was that to me was really exciting to at the end of the run to just see that, because obviously during the run you have no clue. Yeah. And that's that's a funny aspect about blindfolded runs. You have no clue what's going on, who's watching and stuff like that. That said, there are a lot of people who don't live stream their runs and who just, you know, that also can have a positive effect on doing runs in the long term, because you can just reset whenever you feel like it. You can do the runs whenever you feel like it, whenever you have time, and just record it locally. So yeah, I would say the most celebrated or the most hyped moments were probably the ones that were really stressful at first, and then sort of a good feeling of relief afterwards, like the long blindfolded runs.
So just a quick thing before I go into the final question was to do with that, like the unveiling of the blindfold after the run, like for the Super Mario. What's the first thing is, do you read through the chat? Do you, what is the first thing to do, should say, like to find out what's been going on for the last several time?
At the end of my Mario 64, the first 70 star run, I remember chat going crazy, but I didn't realize part of that was also because, not just because I finished the run, but also because the stream was lagging horribly because the chat was very, very busy. And I don't know why it happened. I think it had to do with the bots. I was on streaming from a laptop back then a couple years ago, and the CPU couldn't handle it apparently. So the stream lagged, and so the very final part of the run looked really choppy. But yeah, I was not really reading chat or trying to interact with anyone the first like 1 or 2 minutes. And then I think Parisian Player came onto voice call to congratulate me. So he's a blindfolded runner as well. And yeah, took off the blindfolds and realized how weird it feels to not have a blindfold on, to actually see lights.
See the lights.
Yeah, after so many hours. Well, that was, it took about 8 hours. It's not the longest run ever. It's also, it sounds extremely bad compared to optimizations of the same run after that. But I looked to the right of me and saw a glass of water that was still pretty much half full. Like weird things like that. You just kind of blindfolded runs, longer blindfolded runs are just super, you just kind of have to dive into a completely different world. It's like waking up from a weird dream, I guess.
And my final question will be, what's in the future plans of Katoon 24?
Wow. My future plan, well, definitely continuing what I'm doing right now, which is Kaizo Hacks, trying to beat as many as possible. Trying to also beat as many as possible of the hardest standard hacks, which are not Kaizo in design, but some of them might be harder than the hardest Kaizo hacks, in fact. And one particular thing specifically would be to make my own hack. I have been working on it for about a year. Not so much level design, but coding custom sprites, coding custom physics changes, stuff like that. Something I want to do on stream also more, making the level design with Lunar Magic, which is the main tool that people make levels with in Super Mario Worlds. Being more, focusing more on the creative part of hacks and not only the gameplay part. I do not think I will ever do speedruns seriously of Kaizo hacks. Yeah, just continuing to kind of do what I do right now, I would say.
And if people wanted to check you out, where would they be looking?
Twitch.tv/Katoon24. So that's KATUN24. Discord server as well, and the YouTube channel, which I use, well, obviously for the blindfolded runs. If you're interested in that, they're all on my YouTube channel, which, well, I guess you can find me by Katoon24 or blindfolded Katoon24, the same name as on Twitch, or there's links on my Twitch page as well to Discord and YouTube. So yeah, you can find all the VODs of the blindfolded runs there, and also more recently VODs of playthroughs of Kaizo Hacks I've been uploading as well.
Oh, Katoon, I really appreciate taking time out for this. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you did as well, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Was fun.
No worries at all. And I hope everyone listening enjoyed it as well. And have an amazing rest of your day, evening, morning, depending on your time zone. And we'll catch you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed the conversation and want to hear more with amazing guests, be sure to head over to youtube.com/waveloki, Loki spelled with a C, or waveloki.com/nohitpodcast.